9:07, 7 minutes after 9 here, AM 760, a Progressive Talk. Sunny, high today, 67. And it's nice, David Long, Jay Marvin with you. And right now we're going to talk to Lloyd Chapman, president of the American Small Business League, and we'll find out how he feels about the bailout and what's going on with the economy. And Lloyd, good morning. Good to have you back on the show.
Well, thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, you bet. All right. You're president of the American Small Business League, and you've got how many members?
Oh, we have about 100,000 members, plus we work with all the chambers of commerce around the country, and they've got millions of members. So we've got a lot of people that we work with.
Okay, and you now become a featured blogger, by the way, on Huffington Post, which is great. I think that's excellent.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. That gives us a nice voice out there in America.
Yeah. All right. How do you see the bailout?
Well, let's see here. I think the bailout was written by Wall Street attorneys to benefit Wall Street. I'm told from some journalists that the provisions in the bailout bill that limit compensation for the Wall Street financiers was written by their attorneys are largely unenforceable. And here's a good example of what I think about the bailout bill. Section 107 of the bailout bill gives the Secretary of the Treasury the ability to waive any provision of federal acquisition law that he decides. Now, for people who don't know, it's called the FAR, Federal Acquisition Regulations. Those are all the laws and regulations that deal with how the government buys goods and services. If you put them on a shelf in hardback, there'd be about 3 feet of books, and Secretary Paulson can waive any provision that he wants to. And specifically, now there's probably 1,000 provisions of federal acquisition law that talk about waiving provisions that affect woman-owned firms and minority-owned firms. So that's just an example. Why is it necessary to waive federal law that has to do with minority-owned firms and woman-owned firms to buy basically bad loans from Wall Street financial institutions?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that.
And yeah, I don't think there is a good reason for that.
How does this bailout, how does it affect the small business person?
Well, you know, there are a lot of people out there that are probably, you know, much more qualified than I am, but I'll give you my opinion. I think that it's not going to help middle-class America and small business people in any way. I think it's going to be a year from now, maybe 2 years from now, it's going to be a catastrophe. Because basically what's happening is the large, you know, financial institutions have made billions of dollars in bad loans. And I saw an article in the San Francisco Chronicle that said that in the past 2 years, as Wall Street firms are going bankrupt, they paid their executives $60 billion in bonuses. So I believe it was Lehman Brothers, just before they filed bankruptcy, paid themselves $6 billion in bonuses and then filed bankruptcy. So think about having a business and then taking all the money out of your bank account that you would use to pay payroll and pay your bills and paying yourself a bonus and then filing bankruptcy. That's what the Wall Street financial institutions did, and now the government's going to come in and rescue them and buy all these bad loans. And so guess what's going to happen? All these bad loans, all these people out there that shouldn't have bought those houses in the first place, now we have this huge, you know, virtual depression. Guess what's going to happen to those loans? They're all going to go into default. So the government's buying, you know, $700 billion in loans that are just most likely going to be very hard to collect on that money. So I just think it's going to be a catastrophe.
Yeah, and I've even read figures. I was reading figures this morning, critics this morning, that were saying that the $700 billion figure is not enough.
Yeah, I hear it's going to be $1 trillion.
Yeah.
And think of it this way. So the purpose of the bill, the way they sold it to the American people with Bush's, you know, fear-mongering tactics going on national television and telling people, cheer, you know, your 401k retirement money is not going to be safe unless we do this, which is just not true. What they could have done is taken, you know, all the money or a portion of the money and said, okay, so middle-class America is having trouble getting access to funds to, you know, grow their businesses. So we're going to take, you know, $100 billion and set up a special program where we're going to loan that money to small businesses in the same way that we have SBA guaranteed loans now. Think without, you know, as opposed to a trickle-down program or a trickle up, whatever you would call it, put that money directly into middle class America so they can grow their businesses. They didn't do that. In fact, one provision, you know me, I'm always harping about the government giving small business contracts to Fortune 500 companies.
Right.
I was lobbying, you know, 7 days a week to try to get Congress to put one sentence in the bill that I think would direct $100 billion in federal contracts to middle-class America, which is the government will no longer report awards to publicly traded companies as small business awards. Of course, I didn't get that done. Did you see section, was it 503, about the wooden arrows?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. A full page of legislation to give a tax break to companies that manufacture wooden arrows designed for use by children.
That is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen.
Well, you know, there were several things in there. I believe NASCAR gets, hundreds of millions of dollars in tax breaks. And it's just.
Who lobbies for this stuff?
Oh, the biggest lobby firms in Washington. I tell you something, Jay, that I haven't really seen much on, but I think we will. It was, let's just say, $700 billion for Wall Street. How much money did they spend lobbying to get that bill passed? Can you imagine?
Oh, it must have been astronomical.
Think what happened to those members of Congress that voted against it. Can you imagine the lobbying pressure that was put on them? And I'm guessing, I don't know the names of the people specifically that voted against it, but I would imagine that in many cases there was a large infusion of contributions in their campaign.
Yeah, that would be
not unheard of.
Yeah, that would be. It's not unheard of, and that would definitely be worth checking out. 9:13, 13 minutes after 9 here on AM 760, Progressive Talk, our old friend Lloyd Chapman, president of the American Small Business League. So you think that down the line, what we're going to end up having here is we're just going to end up having a catastrophe?
I think so. In fact, I've seen a lot of nationally famous economists, you know, on television, people who have, you know, written best-selling books, refer to it as a ripoff. And it just doesn't make sense. I'll tell you something. I've spent a lot of time in my life lobbying Congress. And when Congress has a bad bill that they know people aren't going to like, they pass it really quick. It's a little trick they use. They'll try to actually pass it before the public even sees the bill. I've seen them do that in the House and the Senate. So what didn't happen with this bill is there was no public hearings. See, so normally something of this magnitude, there would be public hearings with, you know, a dozen experts, you know, Alan Greenspan, you know, Warren Buffett, people like that would come and testify, but they didn't do that. And that was very interesting. I think a lot of people in Congress admitted that they voted for it without reading it.
Oh.
I think that's been on national television. So, these sections that repeal federal procurement law for women and minorities and give NASCAR tax breaks and people make children's, you know, toys, that's going to be just the tip of the iceberg. I think the things we're going to find are just going to be, people are just going to be stunned at what comes out of this.
Well, the whole question of these, of pork barrel and the whole question of taxes and all of this stuff is just so mixed up in a dark, smelly stew that it's hard to figure out one way or the other what's going on. I've got a guy I know who's very conservative, very right wing, who is a small business owner, although he makes a lot of money, and he is dead set against Barack Obama because it is his belief that Barack Obama is going to raise taxes on him and destroy his business. And there's, you know, no matter how many times you send him Obama's tax plan, and you sent him stuff from Obama's anti-smear page on his website, the guy just can't, he won't accept it.
You know, there's a saying that says, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still.
Right.
And some of these Republicans, to realize that the Republican Party has destroyed America's image around the world with this ridiculous, you know, wars, you know, for weapons of mass destruction that didn't exist. They've destroyed our economy. I like to ask this guy, is there anything Republicans can do? You know, what do they need to do for you to quit being a Republican? They've destroyed us, you know, our worldwide image as this benevolent, you know, country that always does what's right. They've destroyed our economy. What do they need to do for you to, you know, to bail from that party?
I don't know. I don't know. I have tried and tried and tried, and I mean, you deal with a lot of small business folks. I mean, do they feel threatened by Barack Obama?
No. In fact, I'll tell you something interesting, and And I think I'm an expert on this subject because I was a small business owner for 20 years. It's much better to be in business and, let's just say, you know, make $250,000 a year and pay 5% higher taxes than go bankrupt and have low tax rates. So tell your friend, you know, low taxes aren't going to help you if you're bankrupt. Also tell them this, that Barack Obama's tax plan, which is there for all to see and read, will only raise taxes on people that make, I think, more than $250,000 a year, which I think is, you know, some very small percentage of small business owners. But even those people, I personally remember I was a born and raised, you know, Texas a Republican for the first, you know, 50 years of my life. But I would much rather pay slightly higher taxes on a twice the income than have low taxes on a low income when I'm struggling, you know, to pay my electric bill. So help your friend understand this one thing. Republicans have been trying to end all federal programs to help small businesses since Ronald Reagan. Look at what George Bush has done. Just in the last month, here's what Bush has done in the last month. He's refused to release, for the first time in half a century, the government's small business contracting statistics for the previous fiscal year. They will not release it.
Hmm.
I want a district court ruling here in San Francisco directing the SBA to release the names of all the firms that received government small business contracts in 2005 and 2006. First of all, why do you have to go to federal court to get that? Number two, they appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, so I'm going to have to spend $250,000, which I'm going to do, and go to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and beat the government for about the 10th time to simply find out who's getting the small business contracts. So why do you have to do that? It's because they're going to Fortune 500 companies. The next thing, about 10 days ago, they suspended the small disadvantaged business contracting program that allows, you know, minorities to start companies and try to start getting government contracts. And now they're still refusing to implement this program for woman-owned firms. And then I guarantee you Section 107 that allows the Bush administration to repeal any and all federal laws is going to hurt small businesses. So just in the last month, they've done things that are sort of historic, I would think. Think about going to federal appeals court. That's a big deal, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
To withhold the names of the companies that got small business contracts. Why in the world would you have to do that? So, again, tell your friend that tell him to forget, stop listening to what George Bush says and what John McCain says, and open a book, you know, turn on his computer, and look at what they've done. And what they've done is everything they can do to hurt small businesses. And this latest bailout bill is the latest example.
And what do your members say?
You know, to tell you the truth, our members, like, you know, they're Americans. You know, some of them are for, some are against it. But I'll have to say, if you find someone who's in favor of the bailout bill and start talking to them, they can't explain it to you. So find anybody who loves the bailout bill that doesn't, you know, work on Wall Street, and ask them to explain exactly what it does, and they will not be able to do that. And again, I think very few people understand. I certainly don't profess to be an expert on it, but at its most basic level, you know, the facts are Wall Street financial institutions paid themselves $60 billion over 24 months, made all these bad loans, you know, where they're loaning money to people that had no business being, you know, having that kind of debt, and they bankrupted themselves, and now we're going to step in and bail them out. That's the bottom line. It's the federal government buying these really horrible home loans. It drives me crazy.
Do you think we could have gotten away with doing nothing?
You know, yes, I do. In fact, you know, isn't the Republican, one of the foundational principles of the Republican Party is, you know, less government and less marketplace?
Yes.
Right? Isn't that their deal?
Yeah.
Their whole thing is less government. We don't need government in our business. And, you know, less regulation. Let the marketplace, you know, solve all these problems. Well, the marketplace was solving the problems. These big crooked financial institutions that were giving their executives billions of dollars and making bad loans are going bankrupt. That's the marketplace solving the problem right there. And then the Republicans step in, oh, well, it doesn't apply, you know, to our guys. You know, if small businesses go down the tube, then that's the market forces. But if these big, you know, Republican institutions start to fail, we got to step in. Think about this. Paulson was the president of Goldman Sachs.
That's right.
Then he came to Washington. Can anybody guess where he's going to be working by mid-January?
Well, he'll go back into the big Wall Street financial
institutions. Where in the world would you find a situation where 90 days before the guy's going to be leaving, he gets to write the bill that regulates his industry? I think that's called a conflict of interest.
Yeah, I think it is too, and I think that it's pretty common with this administration.
Oh.
Lloyd, thank you, man.
And I
urge everybody to go to ASBL.com, whether you're a small business owner or you're not, because Lloyd's out there fighting the good fight. And by the way, I want to hear from you about what happens with this lawsuit.
Oh, well, we're going to win. I'll tell you, it's one thing that's going to happen.
Well, I want to hear about it when you do.
All right.
All right.
All right, thanks a lot.
You bet, thanks. There's Lloyd Chapman, president of the American Small Business League, and he talked about the bailout, and he also talked about Obama and taxes. 9:23, 23 minutes after the hour here on AM 760, Progressive Talk. John talks about traffic. Twenty-seven minutes after nine here, AM 760, Progressive Talk. Sunny, high today, 67. Jay Marvin along with you, and here's Hank in Broomfield. Hank, you're on AM 760. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Is it my turn to talk?
It is absolutely your turn.
Okay. I was listening, and someone called in a little before 9 o'clock saying that McCain started the fire on the Forrestal.
Right.
And that's not true. I'm a former Navy pilot, and I know that story. And the story is this. The Forrestal was all set for a launch. Pilots were in their airplanes with weapons on them. And the radar, the energy from the radar cooked off one of the missiles, and it shot across the deck and hit John McCain's airplane. His was the first airplane to catch fire. He was able to escape, and he was not helicoptered off of the carrier, but that's how the fire started, and McCain had nothing to do with that, starting that fire.
So it wasn't a wet start, as the other caller had said.
No, it wasn't. It was a terrible accident. Which started a terrible, it was almost like the Forrestal was attacked by enemy aircraft. It was so damaged.
Well, you know, that probably could be true. But the way he's been conducting himself later in his life, there must have been some damage done.
I don't understand what you mean.
What I'm saying is that what you're saying may be true, but the way he conducts himself now, I don't know, maybe he hit his head or something.
No, I'm not a McCain fan. I'm not going to vote for McCain. I'm going to vote for Obama, but I just wanted to set the story straight on that Forrestal fire.
Well, I'm glad you called in, and I'm glad you did that, because I knew that there was a fire on the Forrestal, but I didn't know that he was involved in it. I had, I'd never heard that before. So, good to have you come on and debunk that.
Yes. Okay. Talk to you later.
All right, Hank. Thanks, and have a good day today.
You too. Bye.
All right. 9:30, 30 minutes after the hour here on AM 760, Progressive Talk. John Turk with traffic. Clearwater Revival at 9:34, 34 minutes after the hour here, AM 760, Progressive Talk. Sunny, high today, 67. What's that guy's name? I can't think of his name for some reason, because I'm really vacant here this morning and struggling to get through. The lead singer of Creedence. Yeah, John Fogerty? I met him once, like years ago in San Francisco. Wasn't a very nice guy. I wonder if he's changed. He's kind of a jerk. All right, let's talk about something that a lot of people are nervous about, and that is voting and vote caging and problems with voting. And we have Brad Friedman of bradblog.com online to talk about all of this stuff. Brad is an investigative citizen journalist, blogger, political commentator, broadcaster and creator, and managing editor of Brad Blog, which Britt Hume of Fox News has described as popular. And he has filed literally thousands of stories on issues of election integrity and electile dysfunction since at least November 3rd, 2004. Brad, good morning and welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jay. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. I haven't had John in a long, long time. It's good to have you back on again.
Always happy to be here, especially right now with what you guys are going to be facing in a couple of weeks out there in Colorado.
Yeah, there's all these. I've had people call me and say that Mike Kaufman, the Secretary of State, who's also running for Congress himself, is not on the square on this voting and that they are going through and purging the lists. And hey, have you heard anything about this?
Yeah, there's a lot of information out there, and it's hard to discern exactly what's accurate and what's not because the state is not, none of the states really are open about their voting rolls, who has been purged and who hasn't. In many cases, they've hired private companies. Again, you know, some of these same private companies who did such a crappy job with our voting machines have now been rewarded by, being allowed to run our voting rolls as well. So Denver, of course, I'm sure remembers the meltdown that you guys had in 2006 with registration books. And what's happened since then, and with Mike Kaufman's administration, I would be very concerned if I were a resident of Colorado right around now.
Well, I know the DNC is actively looking to get lawyers to help them out. As a matter of fact, a lawyer friend of mine was handed a card and was asked if he would be willing to either do it here or do it in an adjacent state, be on standby in case there are any issues. So at least the one comforting thing is this time around, at least the DNC is hipper to this than they were before.
Can I take away your comfort a bit?
Sure. Go ahead. Yeah.
The key there is be on standby. Frankly, what we're hearing from the Obama and DNC right now is pretty much what we were hearing from the John Kerry DNC 4 years ago. That concerns me. The attorneys for the DNC and for the Obama campaign should not be on standby right now. They should be hard at work because there is problem after problem in state after state. Now, you know, since we're in Colorado here, I'll just point to Mike Kaufman and his frankly rather remarkable court-ordered study of the voting machines, you know, which found that none of them work, and yet he then turned around and said, okay, go ahead and use them anyway because you've got these election officials who really love them. The people of Colorado need to make sure that there will be a paper ballot for every voter who wants to vote in a paper ballot. Obama and the DNC ought to be in there raising holy hell to ensure that. And then, you know, on some of these other issues, these purges, I mean, here are some of the things that we do know for certain about Colorado. El Paso County, you've got a registrar who's putting out notices to Colorado College saying that students who, from out of state, students who register in Colorado will lose their student aid. They must be declared as dependents, they can no longer be declared as dependents by their parents on their tax form. And that's completely incorrect. And if that were only some rogue official in El Paso County, Colorado, I wouldn't be quite as concerned. But we have heard the exact same language, the exact same edicts being issued in Virginia, in South Carolina, in state after state. These guys are going after students, after minorities. They're trying to scare people away from the polls. They're going to be challenging voters everywhere. And the Obama DNC campaign need to get out in front of this, frankly, and start raising holy hell, because I promise the bad guys are going to be out there. They're not on standby. They're at work right now.
Yeah. You know, there's all kinds of stuff going on here that slips beneath the radar. And there's all kinds of ways to intimidate people and get them not to vote or not to participate. I was talking on the air here last week about this letter that I received from Americans for Limited Government Foundation. You ever heard of them?
No, but I can only guess.
Okay, this is this guy Howard Rich, who's this real wealthy right-wing guy. And the letter says, check this out. You should do a story on this. Recently, a new left-wing organization announced that it would be targeting donors to conservative free market organizations. The major press announcement stated that the organization intended to engage in such activities as public exposure, having watchdog groups digging through their lives of these individuals and possible legal trouble. As someone who has been put through this abuse over the years, I can tell you from firsthand experience that it is not fun and not something to take lightly. I have supported groups and efforts that I believe will push back against the radical agenda of the left, and I have paid the price for it in attacks, slurs, and threats. As a donor to one or more of these organizations and efforts, you have been able to engage in these activities without notice, operating in relative obscurity. I'm writing to inform you that this will no longer be the case. Your name has been put in our database. We are monitoring all reports of a wide variety of leftist organizations. As your name appears in subsequent reports, it is our intent to publicize your involvement in your local community. Should any of these organizations be found to be engaged in illegal or questionable activity, it is our intent to publicize your involvement with those activities. You should know that instances of coordinated voter fraud are surfacing all across America, and investigations into possible criminal coordination are underway. And then you get this... You get this letter from the law offices of Webster, Chamberlain, and Bean, where this Frank M. Northam is an attorney, I guess, there, and he cites the federal election laws. And basically what he's doing here is he's threatening you. You know, he's threatening me. And it has to do with, campaign contributions, contributions to interest organizations, and I'm going to engage some kind of fraudulent behavior as far as elections go.
There's so much in that letter, and I had seen something similar to that a couple weeks ago. I mean, for one, you realize, of course, the letter starts out by saying there are left-wing groups who are going to intimidate right-wingers, and this is bad. Therefore, we're sending you this letter to let you know we're going to intimidate you, you left-winger. And then they go on to raise this phony, and it is phony, this phony specter of voter fraud going on. This is a national campaign. They're trying to make it appear that, you know, there's this massive Democratic voter fraud going on. There is absolutely none. They're targeting groups like Acorn, who have done, frankly, yeoman's work in going into low-income areas and registering voters so that they can exercise their franchise, their constitutional right to vote. And the thanks that they get in the process is they get attacked because they are being rather effective in signing folks up. Now, what they'll say is, you know, they're turning in all of these fraudulent registrations. And you're going to hear this, Jay, a whole lot between now and November about Acorn turning in fraudulent registrations. What you won't hear is that when Acorn goes out and registers folks, they actually take the registration forms and confirm every single one of them. They authenticate them by calling the phone number, making sure the people who are who they say they are. And if they can't make that authentication, they flag the registration form as fraudulent. And then they turn it in with that flag on because they have to turn in registration forms. Even if they're incomplete, you know, it's illegal to tear them up and throw away registration forms, even if they believe they're fraudulent. So they turn them in, they're flagged as fraudulent, and then these bad guy election officials and GOP folks see these registrations, and they say, look, Acorn has turned in all of these fraudulent registration forms. Acorn is committing voter fraud, and the Democrats are behind it. I mean, it's just the most absurd thing. But what they want to do is, come election day, they're going to challenge people at the polls. They're going to force you to, show a photo ID. They're going to hold up the line. Remember, just by challenging and questioning on election day, they can send those lines around the block, keeping people from being able to cast a vote because, hey, it's a work day.
How about the idea, though, of voting early and mailing your ballot in?
Look, if your only choice to get a paper ballot is to mail in an absentee ballot, then so be it. And I know the Democrats in Colorado are real big fans of absentee vote by mail. Then again, they were also some years ago big fans of touchscreen voting. I'm looking ahead. I know that when you drop your paper absentee ballot into a mailbox, it may or may not get to the county. It may or may not get counted, and it may or may not get counted accurately because it's still being scanned through the same electronic optical scanners that you would use if you were voting on paper on election day. So if you have to vote on a touchscreen in your particular county, find out, can you vote on paper on election day? If you can't, then sure, go ahead, use an absentee ballot, but find out, can you deliver that absentee ballot on election day to the polls? If not, then sure, go ahead and mail it in or bring it to the county if they'll allow you to do that.
Yeah, I think you can. I think you can do that here. I think you can fill it out well in advance, vote early, and I think you can go and turn it in.
If you can turn it in, that's fine. But, you know, when you vote on Election Day on a paper ballot, we know that there are, you know, 373 people who voted at that precinct, so there should be 373 ballots. When you vote absentee, they all sort of get thrown into a great big bin together as, you know, absentee ballots, and you have no idea how many there should or shouldn't be. And, you know, we've had enough of faith-based voting where we just presume that the election officials are all going to be on the up and up and everything is going to go well. People need to take responsibility for their democracy. And I think particularly with Colorado this year, look, you guys are set to be the next Florida or Ohio with your Secretary of State. And you know, as close as Colorado was going to be, people really need to pay attention and make sure that their vote gets there, gets counted, and that everyone gets the chance to vote if they want. We've got to be proactive here, Jay.
Yeah, I agree. And people should start checking this stuff out.
Well, you know, we've spent years, you know, just presuming that everything is going to be okay. But we have learned in election after election, and with you guys in 2006, you know, yet another election where we learned that's not going to be the case. So I hope people will sign up to be poll workers, will be poll watchers, will bring video cameras to the polling place when they go to vote. You know, democracy doesn't create itself here. It really needs to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And for that to happen, the people need to get more involved in the process than just, you know, maybe showing up on Election Day and then going home and watching results.
Yeah.
I
believe you're absolutely right. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're going to vote absentee and vote early. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take our ballots and hand carry them.
To the polls on Election Day?
No, to the Registrar of Voters.
To the Registrar of Voters. Yeah, that's, you know, certainly better than voting on a touchscreen and what you might face on Election Day. But, you know, I'm really concerned about Colorado. I'm sure you have talked about it. You had this the state election director who was apparently living with one of the voting machine contractors.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He had to, resign, 60 days out from the biggest election Colorado ever had. You got Kaufman overseeing his own election as Secretary of State. He knows. I mean, if you go back and look what he said when they released the tests of those voting machines, to think that, you know, he talked about waving a magnet in front of a touchscreen voting machine can crash the entire system. When you think that he tried to decertify them and then under pressure said, you know what, let's go ahead and use them anyway. I think that's just a frightening scenario for democracy. I can't imagine what he is thinking. I can't imagine what the people of Colorado are thinking for not raising absolutely holy hell about this guy and his election procedures.
Well, you know what? I don't know either. But I think one of the problems is that you're on here talking about it, but we're only one voice in the mix, and most of the mainstream media is not saying word one.
No, they're not. But you will be hearing what they will be talking about is this phony voter fraud stuff. That will get out because that is being put out by Republicans and that gets picked up. Now, if the Democrats were making that same kind of noise about all of these other things that you and I are talking about here, then maybe it would be getting out. But I really think that they're sitting back. I've talked to a lot of these DNC attorneys. They're saying the same thing as 04. Oh, we're going to have thousands of lawyers out there on Election Day. If anything goes wrong, we'll be there. Well, newsflash, by the time we get to Election Day, it's a done deal. They need to be out there now. They need to be making news, making noise right now so people can hear this stuff and realize, okay, we have to do something about this. And I'm just, you know, quite concerned that they are in, I don't know if it's denial, fear, or what, but I'm seeing a lot of patterns repeated from 2004 here with these Democrats.
I think people have a suspension of disbelief when it comes to this. In other words, they think that hearing you on there and me and the two of us talking about this, that, you know, that we're, you know, conspiracy theorists and crackpots and that, you know, that how can anybody cheat them out of their vote and that things are going to be okay. And,
well, you know what? Go to Republican Secretary of State Mike Kaufman's own report on the Colorado voting systems. read what he had to say about those machines, then go back and look at the photographs from Denver 2006 and the lines around the block when the e-poll books, the registration check-in poll books, broke down, melted down, and people could not vote, stood on lines for hours. Go look at the photographs from 2004. I mean, I don't know what it takes to convince people this is not some crazy conspiracy theory, that votes are being lost, that elections are being flipped because of what's going on with this system. I mean, what does it take? We've seen it election after election after election. How can anybody still be in denial about the concerns? I don't think the people are. I think the Democrats are, excuse me, and I think the mainstream corporate media is. I think the people get this, but they're not being given the information that they need to act on it.
Why doesn't the Obama campaign say something about it?
You know, I don't know. It's that same thing. It's the old Democratic school is still running that campaign, unfortunately, and they're still in that same sense of denial, and they think they're going to be called, sore losers, conspiracy theorists. Look, Barack Obama had the chance to recount every single ballot in the state of New Hampshire after the New Hampshire primary that all of the polls and the exit polls showed he should have won, yet Hillary Clinton ended up being named the winner. Now, maybe Hillary Clinton was the winner there, but the fact is 20% of New Hampshire is counted by hand. 80% of New Hampshire is counted by the exact same Diebold optical scan paper ballot systems that we saw in HBO's documentary, Hacking Democracy. We saw those machines used to flip an election without detection unless you bother to count the ballots to make sure. Obama could have counted the whole state for $2,000 because he was so close, and he didn't choose to do so. Why? Don't the voters deserve to know that their election results are accurate? I think they do.
I do, too, and I've never been able to figure that out. Brad, thank you, man.
Yeah.
And we'll have you back on again before the election rolls around.
Always happy to, Jay. Thanks for making noise on this. Got to wake up the people here.
You betcha. Brad, thank you so much, man.
My pleasure.
All right, there's Brad Friedman. Go to his blog, bradblog.com, for more information on this. And we should be aware that this kind of stuff does go on. And if there's anybody in the major news media listening, you ought to take a little look into Mike Kaufman and Mike Kaufman's activities. 9:52, 52 minutes after the hour here on AM 760, Progressive Talk. John Turk takes a look into traffic. Neil! Get it on, Neil.
Today is the day our younger son is going off to war.
9:57, 57 minutes after the hour here on AM 760 Progressive Talk. Jay Marv along with you. Hi today. Going to be 67. And been a very interesting morning this morning. Had a lot of very interesting guests. I'm going to be off tomorrow. David Sirota, the world's smartest man, is sitting in for me tomorrow. Mary's having a medical procedure done, and I need to go with her, and I want to go with her, and she's going to have a brief little operation, and should be out of commission for maybe 2-3 days, maybe only a day. We'll see tomorrow after it happens, but she's going to have it done in the morning, so that coincides with the time that I would be on the air, so David Sirota has graciously agreed to sit in, and then I'll be back on Wednesday morning. So, we will talk to you then, and there'll be plenty to talk about. Boy, without a doubt. And don't forget, too, Tuesday night will be the debate, so we'll talk about that on Wednesday.